When it spoke, it was as though it used his own voice. You must have loved her very much, Quillan. Please, if you can, if you will, look into my soul. The avatar looked levelly at him. Are you sure?
I'm sure.
That long look went on. Then the creature slowly smiled. Very well. It nodded after a few more moments. She was a remarkable person. I see what you saw in her. The avatar made a noise like a sigh. We surely did do a terrible thing to you, didn't we? We did it to ourselves in the end. But, yes, you brought it upon us. This was a terrible revenge to contemplate, Quillan. We believed we had no choice. Our dead... Well, I imagine you know. It nodded. I know. It is over, isn't it? A lot is. My dream this morning... Ah, yes. The avatar smiled again. Well, that could have been me messing with your mind. Or just your guilty conscience, don't you think? He guessed he would never be told. How long have you known? He asked. I have known since a day before you arrived. I can't speak for special circumstances. You let me make the displacements. Wasn't that dangerous? Only a little. I had my backup by then. A couple of GSVs have been here or hereabouts for a while, as well as the experiencing a significant gravitas shortfall. Once we knew what you were up to, they could protect me even from an attack like the one you envisaged. We let it happen because we'd like to know where the other ends of those wormholes are. Might tell us something about who your mysterious allies were. I'd like to know myself. He thought about this. Well, I used to. The avatar frowned. I've discussed this with some of my peers. Want to know one ugly thought? Are there not enough in the world already? Assuredly. But sometimes ugly thoughts can be prevented from becoming ugly deeds by exposing them. If you say so. One should always ask, who has most to gain? With respect, Chell does not in this measure count. There are many involveds who might like to see you suffer a reverse. One may come on its own. They tend to. Things have been going very well with the culture over the last 800 years or so. Blink of an eye stuff for the elders, but a long time for an involved to stay quite as determinedly in play as we have. But our power may have peaked. We may be becoming complacent, even decadent. This seems to be a pause I'm meant to fill. By the way, how long do we have before the second nova ignites? Back in reality, about half a second. The avatar smiled. Here, many lifetimes. It looked away to the image of the orbital hanging in space before them, slowly rotating. It is not impossible that the allies who made all this possible are, or represent, some rogue group of culture minds. He stared at the creature. Culture minds? He asked. Now isn't that a terrible thing to have to think? That our own might turn against us. But why? Because we might be becoming too soft. Because of that complacency, that decadence. Because some of our minds might just think that we need a bit of timely blood and fire to remind us the universe is a perfectly uncaring place, and that we have no more right to enjoy our agreeable ascendancy than any other empire long fallen and forgotten. The avatar shrugged. Don't be so shocked, Quillan. We could be wrong. It looked away for a moment, then it said, no luck with the wormholes. It sounded sad. We may never know now. It turned to look at him again. There was an expression of terrible sorrow on its face. You've wanted to die since you realized you'd lost her. Since you recovered from your wounds. Haven't you, Quillen? Yes. It nodded. Me too. He knew the story of its twin and the world it had destroyed. He wondered, assuming it was telling the truth, how many lifetimes of regret and loss you could fit into 800 years, when you could think, experience, and remember with the speed and facility of a mind. What will happen to Chell? A handful of individuals, certainly no more, may pay with their lives. Other than that, nothing. It shook its head slowly. We cannot let you have your balancing souls, Quillen. We will try to reason with the Chelgrian Puen. It's tricky territory for us, the Sublimed, but we have contacts. It smiled at him. He could see his broad, furred face reflected in the image's delicate features. We still owe you for our mistake. We will do all we can to make amends. This attempt does not absolve us. Nothing has been balanced. It squeezed his hand. He had forgotten they were still holding each other. I am sorry. Sorrow seems a common commodity, doesn't it? I believe the raw material is life, but happily there are other byproducts. You are not really going to kill yourself, are you? Both of us, Quillen. Do you really... I am tired, Quillen. I have waited for these memories to lose their force over the years and decades and centuries, but they have not. There are places to go, but either I would not be me when I went there, or I would remain myself and so still have my memories. By waiting for them to drop away all this time, I have grown into them, and they into me. We have become each other. There is no way back I consider worth taking. It smiled regretfully and squeezed his hand again. I'll be leaving everything in good working order and in good hands. It'll be a more or less seamless transition, and nobody will suffer or die. Won't people miss you? They'll have another hub before too long. I'm sure they'll take to it too. But I hope they do miss me a little. I hope they do think well of me. And you'll be happy? I won't be happy or unhappy. I won't be. Neither will you. It turned more towards him and held out its other hand. Are you ready, Quillen? Will you be my twin in this? He took its other hand. If you will be my mate. The Avatar closed its eyes. Time seemed to expand, exploding all around him. His last thought was that he'd forgotten to ask what had happened to Hyla. Light shone in the sky above the bowl. Kabe, lost in the silence and the darkness, watched the light of the star called Yunsei as it flickered and then blazed, close enough to the earlier fading Nofa of Porticia to all but drown it out. At his side, Quillen, who had been very quiet and still for some time, suddenly slumped forward in his curl pad and collapsed to the floor before Kabe could catch him. What? He heard Tersono screech. The applause was starting. Breath flowed out of the Chelgrian's mouth. Then he went quite still. Noises of shock and consternation built up around Kabe, and as he hunkered down and tried to revive the dead alien creature, another bright, bright light shone above, exactly, precisely overhead. He called Hub for help, but there was no answer. Space, time. Fear, and the sudden tearing pain, the huge white furred face suddenly filling his vision, the despair and terror, and the anger at having been betrayed as he woke and tried, too late, far too late, to bring his hands up in what would have been a futile gesture anyway. Then the ferocious thud as the creature's huge jaws slammed into his neck, and the agony of the steel-like hold, and the instant constriction, the cutting off from air, and the shaking, neck-snapping, brain-rattling, dislodging him from sense and life. Something rasped against his neck. There went Aunt Silda's necklace. The shaking went on. Something thin and broken whipped tinily against his neck, as the blood sprayed out and the breath was worried out of him. "You bastard," he thought, slipping away again from the savage side-to-side thrashing. The pain went on, fading, as he was dragged now, held by the neck, through the alien ship. His limbs hung limp, cut off from his brain. He was a rag, a broken puppet. The corridors still smelled of rotting fruit. Eyes gummed with his own blood. Nothing to be done. Nothing to hope for. Mechanical noises. Then the feeling of being dropped. A surface beneath him. Released, his head felt barely joined to his body, rolling onto its side. Sounds of growling and tearing and slashing. Sounds he felt ought to connect to pain, to some sensation at least, but which meant nothing. Then silence and darkness and the inability to do anything but witness this slow fading away of sensation itself. And another small pain near the nape of his neck. A final tiny jab, like an afterthought, almost comical. Failed. Failed to get back. Failed to warn. Failed to be the hero. It was not supposed to end this way. Dying a lonely, painful death, conscious only of betrayal, fear, and hopelessness. Hissing, fading, cold. Movement, being scraped along inside a sudden chill breeze. Then utter silence, utter cold, and no weight whatsoever. Eugen's Leap, scholar, felt cheated that his blood-gummed eyes prevented him from seeing the distant stars in their vacuum-naked state as he died. Great Yoliesen Eve, this is that which was found in the without by the servants of the higher Ankabine, 6,300 beats to aft. It was brought within the world for the inspection of the higher Ankabine, which sends these remains with its esteem and compliments, believing that yourself might add to the sum of knowledge with its revered evaluation.
This form may have been known to the one to whom you address your remarks. Its appearance brings associations, memories. They are old, though. Now beginning is a deep search of our long-term memory archival storage capacity. This will take some time to complete. Let us talk further on the subject before us while said search is taking place.
Very well. Of interest is that the analysis of the creature's cellular instruction set indicates that the form in which it appears here is not that with which it was first birthed. A representation of the form it would have, according to the original cellular instruction set, is shown here.
That form was once known to us, we are sure, just as this one might have been once known to us. The representation that you have shown here corresponds to the form which is, or was, known as human. Appended to the deep search of our memory archives, which was mentioned earlier, will be the image that you are showing here. This search has not discovered anything of note thus far. It will take a little longer to complete because of the appendment of the visual image of the human form to it.
Human. This is interesting to us, though the nature of the interest is historical.
The creature concerned would appear to have accrued injuries that are not those one would associate with exposure to the conditions which prevail in the without. That is primarily the lack of medium, which absence is commonly termed vacuum, and the associated lack of any temperature save the most negligible.
Yes, the creature's neck is not supposed to be of the appearance that one may see here, either in the form shown physically before us, or in the form which has been recreated in visual form from the biological assignment array. Similarly, its torso appears to have been forcefully and injuriously opened, while these surfaces seem to have been lacerated.
The creature has been bitten, gouged, and slashed.
Such are the actions one would most naturally associate with the alterations to the creature's physiology.
What is known of these injuries, and in particular what is known of their timing, relative to the apprehension of the object from the without?
It is believed that this damage was incurred very shortly before the creature was expelled from whatever medium containment artifact it inhabited prior to said expulsion. The various injuries indicate that the creature was in a state not compatible with the continuance of its life, save for immediate and most highly enabled medical assistance, before its expulsion into the without, where it would naturally die. The circulatory fluid has sprayed out here, here, and here, and then frozen subsequently, as a result of the low temperatures encountered in the without.
The frozen nature of the creature, as we see it here, is as it was when it was found originally then.
That is the case. The medium repelling bubble in which it can be seen to reside was emplaced before its induction from the without. Only very small particles of its body have been brought to ambient conditions, to allow the analyses concerning which we have already communicated.
These small and widespread tissue damages would indicate that the creature was at least still of a temperature approximate to its normal and healthy operating state, and possibly still in an alive condition when it was expelled into the without. Would it be the case that the Hierankabine might agree?
It is the case.
This level of most small damage would indicate that the creature's remains have been exposed in the without for a long time, an interval which might be of the order of a significant proportion of a grand cycle, though not in the order of many such intervals.
The Hierankabine is of a similar belief.
Is it the case that the direction and velocity of the creature's remains at the time of its discovery have been recorded?
It is. The creature's remains were static in the without, according to accepted definition number 3, to within approximately the speed of slow breath at standard temperature and pressure. Such vectoriality was of an orientation similar to the world's to within a quarter pairing.
The deep search, which it was intimated was begun, remains underway, but has still failed to discover anything of interest. What other results from the particles that have been brought to ambient conditions have been added to the store of knowledge?
Some of the frozen liquid taken from the edges of the wound, which the creature suffered upon its neck region, has provided biological instruction set information which tends to indicate that the wound-inflicting agent may have been an individual of the species known as the lesser reviled.
That is interesting. Their name was earlier the Chelgrians, or the Chell, before the outrage that befell the Sansamin occurred. To what level of completeness was the analysis of the human form, which was found to be implicit in the creature that we see before us, taken?
sufficient to provide the image which is seen here.
It is the case that a more complete image of the creature, even to the order of recreated biological corporeality, might further refine and focus the knowledge of the creature's species place in the greater world of all life.
This might be accomplished with equal honor and ability by the higher Anchorbine, or by that to which these remarks are respectfully addressed.
The task is one we are happy to assume. It is noted that the creature is still clothed, and has about its neck a piece, or the remains of a piece, of jewelry. Is it the case that an analysis of any depth regarding these extraneous objects has been carried out?
It is not, mighty Iolaus and Eve.
The deep search of our stored and non-volatile and off-system recall functions, which it was intimated was earlier begun, has now concluded. The creature that is before us was of the name Eugen Sleep, a scholar who came to study the embodiment of the self to which you speak from the civilization which was once known as the culture.
These names are not known to us.
No matter. The body of this creature must have drifted in the without for a little over the period accounted for by one complete world cycle, waiting here with that close to imperceptible four-directed drift which was earlier mentioned, until the world fulfilled another revolution about the galaxy and sailed again into this region of space. This is good to know. This piece of information ramificates and completes. It adds considerably to the sum of knowledge, as will be explained in a report to be prepared for the higher Anchorbine. Is it possible for that to whom these remarks are addressed to attend the finalization of said report, the more expeditiously to convey it to the higher Anchorbine?
It is.
Good. It may then be worthwhile carrying out further investigations, which that to whom you have addressed your remarks would be glad to undertake. It is to be hoped that the higher Anchorbine will share the pleasure that is both experienced and anticipated by the Iolaus and Eve. A series of events which before had no conclusion now may have. This is satisfying to ourselves.
His eyes flicked open. He stared straight ahead. Where there should have been the awful white furred face above him, jaws hinging open, or the cold stars spinning slowly as he tumbled, there was instead a familiar figure, hanging upside down from a branch inside a large, brightly lit circular space. He was sitting up in a sort of cross between a bed and a giant nest. He blinked, ungumming his eyes. It did not feel as though it had been blood keeping them shut. He squinted at the creature hanging a few meters in front of him. It blinked and turned its head a little. "Prath," he said, coughing. His throat felt sore, but at least it was properly connected to his head again. The small, dark creature shook its leathery wings.
"Eugen Sleep," it said. "I am charged with welcoming you. I am 8827 Prath, female. I share the bulk of the memories associated with the fifth order decider of the 11th foliage gleaner troop of the dirigible behemothor Iolaus, which was known to you as 974 Prath, including, it is believed, all those regarding yourself."
Eugen coughed up some fluid. He nodded and looked around. This looked like the interior of Iolaus's invited guests' quarters, with the subdivisions removed.
"Am I back on Iolaus?" he asked. "You are aboard the dirigible behemothor Iolaus and Eve."
Eugen stared at the hanging creature in front of him. It took him a moment or two to work out the implications of what he'd just heard. He felt his mouth go dry. He swallowed. "The Iolaus has evolved?" he croaked.
That is the case.
He put his hand up to his throat, feeling the tender but whole flesh. He looked slowly up and around.
How was I...
he began, then had to stop and swallow and start again.
How was I brought back? How was I rescued? You were found in the without. You wore a piece of equipment which stored your personality. The Yoli Eseneve has repaired and reconstructed your body and quickened your mind life within said body.
But I wasn't wearing any... Eugen began. Then his voice trailed off, as he looked down to where his fingers were stroking the skin around his neck where, once, there had been a necklace.
The piece of equipment that stored your personality was where your fingers are now,
8827 Praff confirmed, and clacked her beak once. Aunt Silda's necklace. He remembered the tiny sting at the back of his neck. Eugen felt tears well in his eyes.
How much time has passed?
He whispered. Praff's head tipped to one side again, and her eyelids flickered. Eugen cleared his throat and said,
Since I left the Yolius, how much time has passed? Nearly one grand cycle.
Eugen found he could not speak for a little while. Eventually he said,
Galactic grand cycle?
8827 Praff's beak clacked a couple of times. She shook herself, adjusting her dark wings as though they were a cloak.
That is what a grand cycle is, she said,
as though explaining something obvious to someone just hatched.
Galactic!
Eugen swallowed on a dry, dry throat. It was as though it was still ripped out and open to the vacuum.
I see, he said.
Closure. She went bounding across the grass towards the cliff. Nostrils flared to the wind and the tang of ozone. Her face fur flattened in the breeze. She came to the great double bowl where the land had long ago been vaporized and blown away. The grass fell curving beneath her. Beyond lay the ocean. In front, the sea stacks rose like the trunks of immense fossilized trees, their bases awash with creamy foam. She leapt. A small drone had been sent to investigate the running figure. Its weapons were armed and ready to fire. Just as it was about to intercept the female and shout a challenge, she came to the grassy edge of the crater and jumped. What happened next was unexpected. The drone's camera showed the leaping figure disintegrate and turn into a flock of birds. They flew past the drone, flowing around its casing like water about a stone. The machine twitched this way and that, then turned and followed. The order came to attack the flock of birds. The drone instigated a prey-rich environment targeting regime, but then another order countermanded the first and told it to attack a group of three more defense drones which had just risen from the nearest sea stack. It curved away, zooming to gain height. Lasers flickered from cupolas high on two of the sea stacks, but the flock of birds had become a swarm of insects. The weapon light found few of them, and those it did simply reflected it. Then the two laser towers began to fire at each other, and both exploded in balls of flame. The first drone attacked the other three as they spread out and accelerated towards the swarm of insects. It shot down one before it was itself destroyed. Then the other two drones attacked each other, swooping in and ramming at high speed, in a flash and a single sharp detonation of sound. Much of the resulting wreckage was composed of pieces small enough to drift in the wind. Several small and medium-sized explosions shook each of the sea stacks, and smoke began to drift across the blue sky. The insect swarm collected on a broad balcony
and resumed the form of a Chelgrim female. She knocked the balcony doors down and stepped into the room. Alarms warbled. She frowned, and they fell silent. The only sensory or command system not fully under her control was a tiny passive camera in one corner of the room. She was to leave the complex's security monitoring system uncorrupted, so that what was done was seen to be done, and recorded. She listened carefully. She strode into the bathroom and found him in the emergency one-person lift which had been disguised as a shower cabinet. The lift had jammed in the shaft. She flowed over the hole, formed a partial vacuum, and sucked the capsule back up. She pulled open the door and reached in for the naked, cowering male. Estodien Viskile opened his mouth to scream for mercy. She became insects. They represented something of a phobia for the Estodien, and poured into his throat, choking him and forcing open the route to his lungs and to his stomach. The insects packed each tiny air sac in his lungs tight. Others bulked out the Estodien's stomach to the point of bursting and beyond, then invaded his body cavity, while others rammed down into the rest of his digestive system, forcing an explosion of fecal matter from his anus. The Estodien crashed and battered about the shower cabinet lift capsule, smashing the ceramic fittings and denting the plastics. More insects streamed into his ears and forced their way around his horrified, staring eyes, burning their way into his skull, while his skin crawled and writhed with the insects which had invaded his body cavity and gone on to slide their way under his flesh. The insects infested his entire body eventually, as he lay thrashing on the floor on a film of his own blood. They continued to insinuate their way into every bodily part of him until, about 3 minutes after the attack had begun, Viskile's movements gradually ceased. The insects, the birds, and the Chelgrian female were made of e-dust. Everything dust was composed of tiny machines of varying sizes and capabilities. With the exception of one type, none was larger than a tenth of a millimeter in any direction. Interestingly, the dust had originally been designed as the ultimate building material. The one class of exception to the tenth of a millimeter rule was that of AM nanomissiles, which were only a tenth of a millimeter in diameter, but an entire millimeter in length. One of those lodged in the center of the Estodien's brain, beside his soulkeeper, while all the other components withdrew and reformed into the Chelgrian female. She padded away from the deflated body lying in its bloody pool. The nanomissiles were, she thought, a giveaway to the identity of her makers, an integral part of the message she was delivering. She went out of the bathroom and the apartment, down some stairs and across a terrace. Somebody shot at her with an ancient hunting rifle. It was the only projectile weapon left working for several kilometers around. She let the bullet pass through a hole in her chest and out the other side, while a set of components in one of her eyes briefly lazed and blinded the male who had shot at her. In the accommodation block behind her, the nanomissile embedded in Viskile's brain sensed his soulkeeper about to read and save his mind. The explosion of the missile's warhead destroyed the whole building. Debris rained down, around, and through her as she walked calmly away. She found her second target trapped in a small two-person flyer, trying to smash his way out of the cockpit canopy with an oxygen cylinder. She pulled the canopy open. The white-furred male lashed out with an antique knife. It penetrated her chest, and she let it hang there while she took him by the throat and lifted him bodily out of the machine. He kicked and spat and gurgled. The knife in her chest was swallowed inside her as she walked to the edge of the terrace. He hung easily in her grip, as though he weighed nothing. His kicks seemed to have no appreciable effect on her whatsoever. At the terrace edge,
She held him over the balustrade. The drop to the sea was about 200 meters. The knife he had tried to harm her with appeared smoothly out of the palm of her hand, like magic. She used it to skin him. She was ferociously quick. It took a minute or so. His screams wheezed out through his partially crushed windpipe. She let his bloody white pelt drop away towards the waves like a heavy, sodden rug. She threw the knife away and used her own claws to rip him open from midlimb to groin, then reached inside, pulling and twisting at the same time as she let go of his neck. He tumbled away, finally screaming in a high, hoarse voice. She was still holding his stomach in her hand. His intestines unraveled, whipping out of his body in a long, quivering line as he fell. Skinned and disemboweled, he was light enough, and his entrails sufficiently elastic as well as firmly anchored, for him to bounce up and down on the end of his own guts for a while, jerking and quivering and shrieking, before she let him fall into the salty waves. She watched the splashes with Chelgrian eyes for a while, then became a cloud of dust in which the biggest single components were the nano-missiles. By the time the warhead in Uweol's brain exploded a few minutes later, she had become an attenuated column of grayness, sucking itself up into the sky, high above. Epilogue.
It is good to have a body again. I enjoy sitting here, in this little café, in this quaint hill village, smoking a pipe and drinking a glass of wine, and looking out over distant Chiles. The air is clear and the view is sharp, and autumn is just beginning. It is definitely good to be alive. I am Shallan Hadesh Hyler, an Admiral General of the Chelgrian Combined Forces. Retired. I did not suffer the same fate as that shared by the hub mind of Masak Orbital and my one-time colleague and charge, Major Tabilo Quillan. The hub pulled me out of Quillan's soulkeeper device, saved me, transmitted me to one of its guardian GSVs, and much later, I was united with my old self, the one which Quillan rescued twice, once with his wife Warasai from the military institute in Cravenir City on Naom, and once with the Navy drone from the wreck of the Winter Storm. Now I am a free citizen on Chell again, with a reasonable pension, in fact two, and the respect of my superiors. Actually, two sets of them, though only one lot know of the existence of the other bunch. And they would resist being called my superiors. I hope that I may never be needed again. But if I am, I will do my duty, not for my old masters, but for my new equals. For I am, by the definition I would have used up to a few years ago, a traitor. The Chelgrian High Command thought that I might have been got at in some way, even turned, before the wreck of the ship was found. However, I seemed to check out, and I certainly made all the right responses. They were both right and wrong. I was turned by the culture, while I was still in the substrate in the Institute on Aeorm. They hadn't thought of that long before the caste war. The best way to turn an individual, person or machine, is not to invade them and implant some sort of mimetic virus or any such nonsense, but to make them change their mind themselves. And that is what they did to me. Or rather, what they persuaded me to do to myself. They showed me all there was to be shown about my society and theirs, and in the end, I preferred theirs. Essentially, I became a culture citizen, and at the same time, an agent of special circumstances, which is the uncharacteristically coy name they employ for their combined intelligence, espionage, and counter-espionage organization. I went along with everything else to keep Masak and its people safe, not to ensure its destruction,
I was SC's insurance policy. Their get-out clause. Their parachute. I heard many colourful analogies. If I had been told to do so, I would have prevented Quillen from making his displacements. Not taken over and done them for him had he demurred. In the end, it was decided that sufficient other safeguards had been put in place for the displacements to go ahead, with the aim of backtracking along the attempted wormhole link to discover and even attack the involveds behind the attack. This failed, and to the best of my knowledge, it is still not known who those mysterious allies were. Though I'm sure SC has its suspicions. I spend most of my time on Masak these days, often in the company of Kabe Ishluya. We have similar roles. I come back here to Chell on occasion, but I prefer my new home. Only recently, Kabe pointed out that he had lived in the culture for nearly a decade before he realized that when the culture calls somebody from an alien society who lives amongst them ambassador, what they mean is that that person represents the culture to their original civilization. The assumption being that the alien concerned will naturally consider the culture better than their home, and so worthy of promotion within it. Such hubris. Nevertheless, I have met Marai Zilla. He was wary at first, but eventually warmed to me. Lately, we have been talking about him accompanying me back here to Chell for an informal visit, perhaps early next year. So I may yet accomplish the task that was only ever Quillen's covering story. They tell me that the Hub and Quillen went together into total oblivion. With no backups, no copies, no mind states, no souls left behind. I suppose it must have been what they both wanted. In the case of the Major, I believe I can understand. And I still feel deeply sorry for him, and the effects of a loss he could neither mourn away nor stand. Though, like a lot of people, I think, I find it hard to understand how something as fabulously complicated and as comprehensively able intellectually as a mind might also want to destroy itself. Life never ceases to surprise. The end.
You have been listening to Look to Windward by Ian M. Banks.